It was a good intro about your jet lag coming back from Stockholm, trying to bounce the ball, and then trying to figure out if it's a lottery ticket or the money owed in that bond in New York City in that case of 500, maybe a half a billion to former President Donald Trump. What's the latest, John Decker? Welcome back.
Well, thanks a lot, Jack. Good to be back with you today. The clock is ticking on Donald Trump to come up with the necessary money to pursue an appeal in that civil fraud case against Donald Trump. We're talking about nearly half a billion dollars in bond that he would need to post to pursue that appeal. And according to Donald Trump's lawyers, he has not had luck so far in securing that bond. Monday is the deadline. And Letitia James, the New York State Attorney General, has said that if indeed that deadline comes and goes, no bond is posted, then she would pursue the process of trying to collect on that judgment. And that means going through the process of trying to get access to assets of Donald Trump to satisfy that enormous judgment that was levied against him by the judge presiding over that civil fraud case.
John, I've given up trying to speculate or picture the future. I just kind of let it come and deal with today and deal with today. But can you imagine? And I'm just thinking of Trump Tower, because if you watch the Netflix series on Trump, the early developer, I mean, he really, the New York City skyline of development from hotels and buildings was the developer Trump. That's how he made his brand. Can you imagine if she goes to seize, for example, I'm being hypothetical, Trump Tower?
Well, I mean, that is a real possibility.
I know, yeah. But can you imagine Donald Trump at a rally? I'm just saying, I understand it. You're a lawyer. I'm not. But this case has been so, it's interesting. I talked about it yesterday in some commentary. It's no criminal charges. I understand the allegations. I know he was found guilty by the judge. They imposed the fine.
Well, not guilty, liable.
Well, no, I'm sorry. You're right. You're right. You're the lawyer. See? Different level of proof. So they go the civil route, but they find him liable for allegedly inflating the value of his businesses for better terms. I mean, I got to tell you, if they start going after his property, it hurts him financially, but it helps him with his base, right?
Well, it does. But, you know, for Donald Trump, he spent his entire professional life building up that business known as the Trump Organization, very valuable properties in that real estate portfolio. He is a very wealthy individual, but he does not have the wealth to simply write a check for the amount necessary, because so much of his wealth is tied up in that real estate portfolio. It's not a liquid portfolio.
Sure.
And that's the reason why he's had to go to these bond companies, been unsuccessful so far in terms of getting a bond company to partner with Donald Trump. They're concerned that they would lose their money if indeed Donald Trump ultimately loses on appeal. I think he could be very successful on appeal, however. I think he's got some good arguments to make, he and his lawyers make in the appeals process. But before you get to that appeal on the merits, you need to post this bond. And that's been the difficulty for Donald Trump. Monday's the deadline. That deadline comes and goes, Jack. That means Tuesday that Letitia James, the New York State Attorney General, can begin the process of trying to essentially secure enough money from the assets of Donald Trump to satisfy that judgment.
And, John, we'll let you go on this. Can you imagine if Elon Musk, it's now called X versus Twitter, just post, "I'm bailing Donald out in cash," over the weekend? Can you imagine? That would probably be the biggest.
I can certainly imagine that. Absolutely.
That would be the biggest.
A possibility, right?
That would be the biggest tweet, whatever you want to call it. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
What do you think, Dr. Vikram Manchamani, host of Navigating Uncertainty, author of the book The Generalist, joining us for a quick update? What do you think? Would that be the biggest X former tweet of all time?
It could be, Jack. I'm not as big on X as I perhaps should be, but I can imagine that, yes.
All right, what do you have for us this morning?
So yesterday, Jack, yesterday afternoon, Federal Reserve decided not to lower interest rates, which in fact, surprisingly, the commentary said that they would be likely to lower interest rates soon. And I think that is what spurred markets into thinking, hey, hooray, 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 they're going to lower interest rates. And, you know, stock markets hit all new highs. Interestingly enough to me, Jack, I paid attention to what happened with gold and Bitcoin, and we saw massive buying in both of those, which implies that perhaps people are worried about the Fed printing more money in the future. So that's something to worry about and think about as well.
Yeah, it's hard to see. June, I think, is the first time they they cut the rates a little bit. Hey, real quick, because we have time, I don't know, how much time do you have? I know you have an appointment.
I've got the lesson I'm teaching here this morning.
Okay, real quick. I know you got your podcast you can talk about, but I also know you released a public letter or statement. You had served on a board of a certain company. I don't know if you want to touch upon it, but I think there's some public interest or media interest, and here you are, a friend of me and the show, and some people may hear about it. There are a lot of business readers out there. My understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong, you were on a board, a big company, I think in Omaha. You resigned over principle. Do you want to touch upon this at all?
Sure, Jack. I can talk about it very quickly. It's out there. Look, I was on the board of a publicly traded trucking company called Werner Enterprises. For various disagreements around three major issues. One, the board was doing business with itself. And I don't think that's appropriate. And so that's called the related party transaction. There was one board member who had a contract with the company of, several hundred thousand dollars. I didn't think that was appropriate. So that was one material disagreement. Another one was the overemphasis on what I'm calling ESG considerations, the idea that we need to prioritize something other than profits in the boardroom. So that was number two. And then the third thing is, I'm a big believer, as I've written in my book and sort of all my work beforehand, that disagreement actually is useful for making better decisions, and disagreement and debate and different perspectives, diversity of ideas, that's what leads to better success in navigating uncertainty, better success in making strategic decisions. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, I didn't see the tolerance for diversity of perspectives that I had hoped led me to resign from this board of directors. So those were the three main reasons. It did get a little bit of press in the trade journals, those focused on transportation, trucking, and logistics. And there are some SEC filings around it, but that's basically it.
Okay, real quick, I know you have to go, but you've been a board member of companies like this. I choose not to. I was told a long time ago by the late founder of New Hampshire Motor Speedway, Bob Baer. He said, Jack, shy away from boards. You're too energetic, and there's a lot of BS, and you want to have patience for it. So I always say thank you. I'll just help, but I don't want to be on the board. But Dr. Vic, why do some corporations, and I think of Anheuser-Busch, why do they feel they have to get involved in like social governance and cultural wars versus just making a product, whether it's Levi jeans or beer or glass windows? Why don't they just create a great company environment for their employees? Obviously no harassment of any kind, though that's not new and there shouldn't be, but a good encouraging employment to move up, to be part of the company, to care about your community if you want to do some good. But why do they feel on boards they have to get caught up in all this, the cultural war debate or the woke stuff? Why do they feel compelled that they need to have an oar in that water?
So I don't know the answer to that question specifically, Jack, other than there is this zeitgeist pressure around America around these concepts such as environmental, social, and governance, or diversity, equity, and inclusion. And these are very, and seemingly good ideas. Who doesn't want diversity? I just talked about diversity of perspective. However, the way
look at your family, your family came here from another country legally, by the way. Go ahead.
Yes, that's right. Yep. So diversity of perspective, nobody's going to debate that. Who doesn't want to have an environment where employees feel included? Of course we do. It's the practice of this that unfortunately has really gone wrong. And so what I think, and I've written about this, there's a famous 1970 article by Milton Friedman, a Nobel Prize winning economist.
We studied him.
So his idea was very simple. Companies should focus on producing profits. Don't get stuck in the social stuff. Don't get stuck in the culture wars.
When did he write that?
1970.
Yeah, pretty smart person.
Last point, Jack, I'll let you go. Basically, the shareholders own the company. Management should produce the most profits and give it to the shareholders. You, Jack, as a shareholder of a company, should get the most profits. Then you can do what you want with those profits. If you want to support a social cause, good for you. You're the shareholder. Yeah. You're allowed to do it. It's your money. But management shouldn't do that.
You know the CEO of Anheuser-Busch, when he finally commented on the case of the whole Budweiser controversy? If he just went out and said, look at the person who was behind this marketing campaign, if that person has some social drive, go do it. We make beer. We make the best light beer in the world. We don't make anything else, and walked away from the podium. You know how many billions of dollars they would have not lost? All right. Listen, thank you. Go enjoy your day. Thank you. Michael Graham, editor-in-chief. I think we can say the word chief without politically offending anyone today. New Hampshire Journal. He has an interesting story, and I want him to drill that. But I first heard about this week. Governor Sununu raised a question in this Adam Montgomery case. And, of course, the body of his five-year-old daughter, Harmony, never found. So this dirtbag killed his own daughter, convicted, guilty. Governor Sununu thinks that, you know, basically in some House members, there's a bill now, if you are convicted of rape, convicted of murder, you should be in that courtroom as the sentencing comes down and facing the judgment. I've covered many, many cases like this over the years in my television news days, and I could not agree more, but yet some people think that's unfair to accused rapists and murderers and felons. Michael Graham, NH Journal. Take it away, Michael.
Well, first of all, Jack, I don't know why you're sitting on your cash when Donald Trump's in so much trouble. Big-time radio star like you, why don't you just stroke a check?
That's a lot of dough, man. That's a, even for people that are really...
That's your sofa cushion money, Jack Heath. Everyone knows
What do you think I am, that Menendez in New Jersey where I got gold bars in my pillowcases?
What? A few Syrian friends. What's the problem? Anyway, just to clarify something, the bill says that if you are charged with a Class A felony, because people watched that trial of the horrific murder of Harmony Montgomery, and they kept asking, where is the accused murderer? Where is he? There's enough evidence against him for a trial to be held. This isn't a preliminary hearing. This isn't a suspicion. This is a full-blown trial, and at the federal level, he would have to be in the courtroom. In most states, he would have to be in the courtroom. New Hampshire is one of these weird states where you can never face your accuser, never have to look at those images, never have to let the people who are testifying against you see you and say, that's the man or woman who did it. And so Democrat Steve Shirtless said, that's wrong. We need to conform with most other states and with the federal government. You should, if a trial gets to the point where your neighbors have used the legal process to say you are guilty and we're going to put you in front of a juror, you should have to face those jurors. And Democrats on the committee yesterday said, well, is that really fair? I mean, you know, we should take this into the requirement that you attend your own trial. They want to say, we'll wait until after you're convicted and then we'll make you show up. So that's where they are. They're concerned that, is it really fair to make an Adam Montgomery sit in his own trial and watch the witnesses demonstrate that he's a guilty, you know, guilty of murder? And it was an interesting angle for House Democrats to take.
Well, Steve Shirtless, who I believe is a Democrat and retired with the U.S. Marshal Service, said he's not concerned by criticism raised by his fellow Democrats.
No, he's not. He thinks it's completely reasonable that if the Attorney General's office has conducted a thorough investigation and they presented the evidence to a grand jury and the grand jury says, yes, you are so likely to be guilty that we're going to put you on trial, that your basic minimum requirement as a citizen is to show up for the bleep, bleep trial. And that's where he is. And by the way, Attorney General Formella sent NH Journal a statement earlier this morning. He supports this and agrees that, once again, this is for rapists and murderers. This isn't like if you're, you know, whatever. You know,
you're gonna do, if you're convicted, you're gonna do at least 15 years. Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, serious.
So this is serious crimes, and you should take it seriously as a citizen, and you should have your butt in that chair and let the accusers face you. And of course, most of the accused want to be there, but sometimes you have a sicko, and the sicko should not be exempted for being a sicko. But Democrats don't agree. Maybe they should. You know, Jack, I mean, have you thought about Adam Montgomery's feelings? I'm not so sure. Hey, Jack, another story that no one else in New Hampshire is going to have except for you and me now. There is a letter from 19 crazy lefties like Bernie Sanders and Mazie Hamono, that Hawaii nut. They want President Biden to pressure Israel to accept a Palestinian state as part of the resolution to what's happening in Gaza, and they want America to bully Israel into to this position. And one of the signees, along with Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey, is Gene Shaheen. She's one of the 19 U.S. senators who says it's time for the U.S. to force Israel, in the wake of the October 7th attack, to accept a Palestinian state. Now, some people say that that's rewarding the murder, rape, and kidnapping that Hamas did by saying the result's going to be a Palestinian state. But apparently,
first of all,
Senator Shaheen does not agree.
Yeah, it's like Schumer calling for elections in the middle of the war between Israel and Hamas with Netanyahu.
Right.
First of all, Netanyahu, you know he's going to say to that. He doesn't care.
Hey,
by the way,
we can say on the airwaves
The
Pulse of New Hampshire.
But Michael, I don't know. You said the term lefties. I don't think that's politically inclusive. Righties might take offense to the term lefties. That's all I'm saying. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Okay.
Michael Graham. Thank you. NH Journal. Lucas Meyer, straight to the dome of the Democrat side, joining us. And a lot going on at the State House, believe it or not. Good morning, Mr. Lucas.
Good morning, Jack. How are you?
Well, a lot going on. Here we are, a lot going on. I mean, you know, sometimes the national stuff does overshadow the local stuff. And I think you tend to keep an eye on the State House more than most. But yet I see the national stuff coming in terms of our state bills and proposed legislation. And I almost see the divide, whether it's sanctuary cities vote and some of the other issues among party lines. But this one that we had Graham on earlier from the Hampshire Journal, this Steve Shurtleff, who's a former Marshall Democrat, this bill that, and I don't have it in front of me, Lucas, but basically House bill that if you're charged with a Class A felony, serious crimes, for example, like if you're charged with rape or murder, and it's obviously spun off the Adam Montgomery case with Harmony, you got to be in court for the proceeding, basically. And I don't know where this goes. Shurtleff's a Democrat. He says some Democrats are concerned about other felons having to do this. He said, I don't care about that. He thinks it's fair. But do you notice the issues typically are getting more, like whether it's crime, immigration? It just seems that a lot of the national stuff is spilling into our local stuff.
Yeah, no, I think that's spot on, and that's only going to get ratcheted up as this presidential race heads towards November. I mean, today you have on the House floor a vote banning trans kids in sports. It's just like,
that's another good example. I mean,
these are not the issues that people really care about. This is not, I think, what people expect their state legislature to be working on, especially in the midst of, you know, cost of living increases with housing, with child care. I mean, the list goes on, and here we are trying to, like, you know me, Jack. I grew up playing sports. Like, playing high school sports was some of the most fun times had, the relationships I made.
You played college, and not a lot of people do.
Yeah, and, like, these are really important times for kids, and I just, like, what are we doing with politicians trying to tell kids who can play what sport? It's just, like, it's madness. Like, let the NHIAA handle it. They put out their position. The state should respect that. These aren't problems. I think people want to see folks, and this is on both sides. People want to see their elected leaders focusing on the issues that matter to them, and these folks risk not just their own political careers, but this larger attitude towards government that they don't see it working for them, that they don't see their tax dollars going to good use, that they say, why even bother voting them? Gerrymandering compounds this with politicians who are pushed to their corners, and you're left having these debates where most of the folks in the state are saying, hey, what about the things that matter to us? So it's an election year. It's a second year session. My personal belief, Jack, is that we should do away with the second year of our legislative session or make it into a special session so that people are called back for special reasons and not, you know, these volunteers are legislating too much.
Anna Brown, Citizens Count On often, and she'll always say going into a legislative, see, it's like 1,000 bills, you know, changing the state bird or whatever come in.
And it makes it totally impossible for people like you, like me, for your listeners to feel a part of the process. So then, even though we have this ostensibly the citizen legislature, it doesn't feel accessible.
Well, you know what happens, though? It gets worse. It's like it even translates to our news consumption and why national TV news is down. If people don't hear exactly what they feel and want to hear, they just tune it out. They don't want to deal with it. A lot of people can't just have an honest discussion, even if they don't agree with someone. Okay, I get it. Okay, I see where you're coming from. I don't agree, but I see where you're coming from. It's just it's getting harder and harder to do. But, you know, you did touch upon, it does seem, and I don't know if it's social media. I don't know if it's because of our politics have gotten more and more divisive. And by the way, everyone wants to blame Donald Trump for that. But I remember politics getting pretty divisive. I remember when George W. Bush, for example, close election was elected. I heard some very vitriolic things about it, what an idiot he was, how stupid he was. And when President Obama won, I heard a lot of the mean, crazy stuff. This stuff has been ratcheting up. You know, this smash in the mouth politics is getting worse, and it's actually getting worse globally. You would hope that at New Hampshire level or Maine, you know, it's more civil, more civic, more respectful, right?
You hope.
But, you know,
here's a good example. Here's a good example, Jack. Just last week, we were talking about a lot of town elections were last Tuesday across New Hampshire. I happen to co-found a nonprofit 6034 that works with a lot of young leaders. And
Hold on. Tell us about that, and then finish your point. But I didn't know you had a nonprofit. Go ahead.
Yeah, 6034 is a nonprofit. I started a couple of years ago with my partner Liz Wester. We help get young people just engaged in the process, be it in the legislature, their city hall, their town hall, or in things happening at the federal level, with an eye towards getting a diverse group of young leaders into planning boards, zoning boards, school boards, town councils, state rep, state senate, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
We look at this from a nonpartisan perspective. In fact, we spent money to help support two Republicans running for school board in Bedford and Londonderry, because they're just good young leaders who want to see their community do better.
Good for you.
And
we've
been supporting candidates and recruiting candidates for a number of years now and operating in these town elections. But we are very mindful, and especially me as someone who grew up in this state, that we think these elections are important, but we don't think these elections need to look like, you know, a race for president. So
right.
When we enter into these races, into these local communities with mail and digital, it's black and white. It's very simple. It's election information. And here's a great candidate you should get to know about.
Right.
Now, the flip side is a Republican or a more conservative outfit started doing similar work in Goffstown only. And they took the sort of playbook from those state and federal elections where they were running attack ads against people running for library trustee.
Yeah.
Now, look. I think you should have an honest conversation about the issues, and I think a debate is healthy. But I think if, like, someone is running for library trustee, you probably don't need to smear them as, like, like a Nancy Pelosi liberal. Like, there's a way to do this and still be respectful.
Yeah.
And I think that was a sign to me that while we are trying to keep some civility in these races, there are other actors that are going to try and come in, even at the local level, to really, really turn these into not even partisan races, but just, like, nasty races.
Well, you know what? I didn't think we'd get a little abstract or ancillary, but it's a good discussion. We have time, so if you have a moment or two, it's interesting why you're talking about that local stuff like Goffstown and Bedford. It's even getting more complex, which makes me I applaud you for getting young people just to get involved, because one of my big pushes on my show, you've heard me talk about recruitment for public safety, recruitment for healthcare, recruitment for military, open people aren't becoming firefighters and police officers and National Guardsmen. So guard, whatever. My point is, though, even within the parties, I mean, President Biden, I'm going to tell you right now, a lot of people jumped all over me. His State of the Union was political. It was definitely a kickoff to the general election, but he beat the expectations of, for, 81-year-old person. He delivered a pretty feisty speech. But when he talked about Lake and Riley, this terrible story in Georgia, and he kept referring to the guy who did it as an illegal, he is an illegal. People in his own party get upset with him. Oh, no, you can't, should say undocumented. And then when I look at Republican stuff, Lucas, the other day I was, Vladimir Putin opened polls for 3 days to get reelected in Russia, right? And I just said his political opponents, they're basically dead or poisoned or in prison. They're killed. I mean, the guy. So I had people jumping on me from the, let's just say whatever lane of the Republican Party. There was no election interference in Russia. There was no election interference in Russia. They actually believe that Putin is a legitimate, he's a good Democrat leader. I'm like, what do you know what I'm saying? It's crazy all over.
But I've had to unlearn this, Jack, a little bit, and again, to begrudgingly come back to like my sports metaphor. But I think a lot of this is viewed through the prism of a game, and that it's a team. It's team on team, and you don't want to give up any points.
Yeah.
And that's just not how like governing works, or how like the world works. And so when people are coming into this, in communication, it's in related, it's in all of this political work, that you, if you concede something that is like an existential crisis, that means everything else you have said is incorrect. And I think we want people to say, oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Right.
At least now I know where you're coming from, and here's where I'm coming from. And like, what are the things that we do agree on? And we know we're gonna fight like hell on these issues.
Well,
but it's that gamesmanship that I think really pushes people to the edges.
Lucas Meyer, Straight to the Dome, Democrat perspective. You know, but Lucas, look at what I do on my show in terms of what I do versus what, you know, you're out there each day doing.
We need more Jack Heath in the world.
No, but you're doing what you do out there in the communities, and you grew up in the state, and you're involved in the public policy, and I think a very smart, mature way. Now, you and I are not agree on everything, but we can have, look at the, we're having a rational, civil discussion right now, just like if we're sitting in a coffee shop talking. We're not throwing food at each other. And, you know, when I have, like, if I have, like, Kelly Ayotte on my show, all I post on the page is Republican gubernatorial candidate, right? Or Chuck Morse. And the comments are, ask her why she hates Trump. Or, or if I have Gene Shaheen a week or so ago talking a bunch of different stuff, it, just amazing. If I just say U.S. Senator Gene Shaheen, comma Democrat, live tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Good Morning, New Hampshire. You should read the stuff. And, and you know, it's funny because one of the things that I do, and they'll say, well, how can you have, oh, one of the comments after having Shaheen on was, I interview her. She's a senior member of our delegation. Now, you may not like her politically, but I respect her. I've known her for years, know her family. People say, why didn't you hold her feet to the fire when you asked her twice this question? And I respond to the emails because I'm like a restaurant owner. I actually respond. I try and be calm in the beginning. I say, my job is not to debate her like I'm running against her. My job is to ask her questions. I think some good, fair, honest questions. Let her answer. Your job, the voter, is to decide whether you like her answer. My job is not to yell and scream. But you look at the media today, that's all it is. They have no...
Yeah.
I remember, do you remember the way, J-Doc helped me out, Hannity and Combs, he passed away, Combs? What was his name? Way back. Remember
Alan
Hannity?
Combs.
Alan Combs. It was great when the two of them were on there, you know, Democrat, Republican, because you could tell they were friends. You could tell they respected each other. That's what's missing in the national side. And I don't know about you, Lucas. I don't think you've probably changed your political outlook since you were 16 to 17, 18 years old, graduating from high school. I know I haven't. I haven't changed at all. I mean, the way I view the world, I've always viewed it this way. And you know the funny thing about Trump, Biden, you know, you can debate all day long if Joe Biden is progressive enough, Democrat enough, whatever. But the funny thing when Donald Trump ran in 2016, and I remember talking to him before he announced he was up in New Hampshire at St. Anselm College. He was up here, I think as early as 2015, 2014. Neil Levesque was talking about this. No one knew what Trump was going to run as. Independent, Democrat, Republican, because he was Donald Trump. It wasn't like he wasn't this inherent conservative. He was Donald Trump, and he still is.
Right.
But all the Trump people think that they own the conservative lane, and that's why the Nikki Haley's and Sununu get frustrated, because typically the people that love Donald Trump, and I get it, and I have him on my show, and I like his policies. I may critique sometimes how he pushes certain issues and works against himself, but it's the same assets that got him there. He's not necessarily a Ted Cruz in his conservative thinking. People don't even know that he was almost a Democrat in his politics or an independent, and he decided to run as a Republican. They don't even know that.
Well, there's this weird, I totally hear what you're saying, and there's almost this weird transition in the post-2020 world where now sort of this like moderate Republican in the Democratic Party is the establishment, and now you're starting to see like the Barstool Sports, Joe Rogan, crypto universe, like young white men who now view these like they are bucking the establishment by supporting Trump. And I think that is a very interesting, concerning trend, especially electorally, but also societally. But I think it's born from this one, from Trump as being a total enigma in politics. I think the Republican Party is in relative disarray because of that exact dynamic you're talking about, which is why you're still seeing Nikki Haley in primary races where she's not even running anymore, still pulling double digit results in these races. So I think the Republican Party is probably heading towards a confluence of conflict.
Yeah, but you know, in fairness,
come out the other side with a new identity, probably.
Yeah, but you know, in fairness, I see it on the Democrat side. You know, the Bernie, the more progressive, the AOC. I don't think they really like Joe Biden. So, I mean, it is kind of the very unusual times. Lucas, if people want to learn more about the 603 or just contact or learn more, best way?
603forward.org. We got a lot of stuff on Instagram, social media. I got a great website. And then for me, Lucas S. Meyer on Twitter or catalystadvocacy.com. Appreciate the time, Jack.
Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent, joining us on that Biden question. Good morning, Rory.
Hey, Jack. Good morning.
Talk about the, you know, Hunter Biden was going to be testifying, his associates, all the stuff. Hunter, there's real legitimate questions, but Joe Biden on the question of the impeachment.
Yeah, it looks, as you said, it's not going to happen, especially now with the retirement of Congressman Ken Buck, the Republican from Colorado. He steps down tomorrow. That gives the Republicans like a 2-vote majority in the House, barely anything to work with. And we know that several House Republicans have said they're not interested in an impeachment of Joe Biden. So a full impeachment won't even pass the House, let alone be voted on by the Senate. So this exercise may be dwindling to an end after yesterday they heard from Tony Bobulinski, and from prison they also heard from Jason Galanis, two people who testified on behalf of the Republicans. Lev Parnas, who you may recall was an associate of Rudy Giuliani, he testified on behalf of the Democrats. A lot of grandstanding for that TV moment, but no Hunter Biden, even though he's the one who demanded at one time having this televised hearing.
All right, Rory. Yeah, interesting stuff. Take it away. Rory O'Neill, NBC News Radio national correspondent. Thank you, Rory.
Thanks, Jack.
Good morning, New Hampshire, powered by Sig Sauer. Now back to Jack Heath on the Pulse of New Hampshire.
Well, J-Dog, you can help me paint this picture with words because you're the one who's going to be helping out. And Mike Goodwin, I think it's a Granite State, it's Independent Living, folks, but a great mission, great, great, great mission. You're helping it out Saturday, wonderful event, NHTI. J-Dog, take it away.
Yes, Mike Goodwin, Vice President of Strategy and Business Development at GSIL, that's Granite State Independent Living, is going to have the wheelchair games where people in wheelchairs playing basketball at NHTI this Saturday. It's going to be all day long. I'm going to be calling at least two, possibly three, games later in the afternoon, and he joins us here on Good Morning New Hampshire. Mike, good Thursday morning to you.
Good morning to you as well. Good morning to you, and thanks for having us on.
Tell us a little about your organization, and thank you, J-Doc, for helping out. Take some time, Michael. This is important, how people can contact you, how people who may not be going Saturday can help the event. Tell us about what you do.
Yeah, Granite State Independent Living. So we are a statewide, you know, nonprofit. We're empowering people with disabilities to really live their best lives. You know, we have 1,500 consumers of all ages that we put through 17 consumer-directed programs, everything from workforce training, education, transportation, attendant care. Those are a few of the 17. But what we really try to do is it's our consumers that are in charge, right? It's what kind of makes us unique, and we look at it as, you know, we're filling the gaps, turning challenges into opportunities so everyone can live their best life, you know, no matter what those disabilities are. And our hoop tournament is just one of those things that it's such a mission-driven event. You know, we're going to have over 200 community members and business leaders Saturday at NHTI competing in our wheelchair basketball tournament. And the event is, you know, it's people with and people without disabilities who compete in wheelchairs in a basketball tournament. And it gives them a small taste of, you know, what it's like to use a chair and the importance of accessibility throughout the community and throughout the state. So it's a really fun event. We're glad J-Dog will be there to help, you know, do some games for us, announce. And I know we have Scott Spradling as well. So we got a couple of pros helping us out.
Yeah,
so thank you.
Hall of Famer, J-Dog. Hey, Mike,
yeah, that's it.
You know, when you're talking about the point of Saturday, and I mentioned this, and thank you both. I had a buddy years ago, I'm not going to say because he's actually on the show this morning, but he had torn, he had had just a simple one of those crazy accidents, had torn, I don't know if it was a calf or a, Yep. You know, tore up his knee, just kind of a bad, you know, one of those accidents. Body went one way, leg went the other. And he had to get some surgery to fix it, you know, and it was fixable mm-hmm. and healable. But he had to spend some time in a wheelchair. And he said, you have no idea, no idea. And he's, you know, he was pretty athletic and very, you know, nimble and agile. So when he had that thing on his leg, he said, you have no idea what it's like to get around. Like in buildings, you start realizing how grateful you are for accessibility, you know, ramps, getting in and out of a car, a vehicle, a building, stairs, if there's no elevator. He said it really was really an adjustment for him.
Yeah. You know something? It's funny you say that. I just had foot surgery and I'm coming off of that. And I was on crutches for about 24 hours, realizing at my age, thinking I could do that no problem. I realized, I said to my wife, I said, this is what our consumers go through every day as I'm struggling on crutches, you know, and to know that we can help provide them services and things that can make their lives better. It's a pretty rewarding thing, what we do, you know, and the work that we do and all of our staff do and our board members. So it really helps make a difference. And you're right. You don't realize until you're in that position.
Until you're there.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike, I want J-Dog to end with the who, what, when, where on Saturday, or you can. But can you go back just to your organization, your entity, how people can help it if they're not going to be there Saturday, but how people can benefit from your services, the website, the who, what, when, where? Just walk us through that slowly, please.
Yeah, absolutely. If people would like to come out and witness this fun event in person, we'd love to have people come out and see it in person. It's at NHTI. It starts at 9 o'clock on Saturday in their main gym. And that'll be, you know, an opportunity for them to see it in action. But if they can't make it and they'd like to support GSIL and the great work that we do around the state, they can go to our website, gsil.org. And there's a donate page that is pretty prominent when you go to the main page. They can support this event through that donation page. If they'd like to sponsor a team or do that's still an opportunity for them. Or if they just like to, you know, support us and see what's going on. The website has a lot of great stuff. Our Facebook page, and we're on social media. You might see our ads on TV and on radio as well, explaining some of the stories of the people we serve and what we do too. So that's the best way to reach out to us and learn a little bit more about what we do and how they can help.
And then if you want to be there Saturday.
Yeah.
Best J-Dog. Who, what, when, where, dog?
This Saturday, NHTI Gym, as Mike had alluded to, and it's going to be all day. It's going to be all day of great basketball, and this is to raise awareness, essentially, of
Can you get a selfie voting, with so. J-Dog or not?
It depends on what the rules are at NHTI. I mean, I'm going to be busy doing announcements, so if people are going to just come up to me and do selfies, that's going to be kind of distracting, wouldn't you think?
J-Dog, I don't mean to use this venue as this. Mike will not object. You still are one of the most eligible bachelors in the state, J-Doc.
Hampshire's most eligible bachelor.
They have national shows in these bachelor shows, J-Doc. I think they go there and just stand in line to meet the dog.
I'd rather
they
watch the
fundraising opportunity.
Mike, good luck. The website one more time, Mike.
Yeah, thank you. GSIL.org, and you can find everything you need to know about us.
How many years you been with the group, and what drew you to the mission you serve?
Yeah, so I've been here for just over a year now. I came from another nonprofit where I'd worked for about 25 years, 40 in total, actually, 25
wow.
Executive director. And the mission here just drew me. It was something that, you know, affected my family growing up, and I got to see how my family handled those types of situations, and it was something that drew me. The mission is really what drew me here. So we do great work and making a huge difference in a lot of people's lives. So we appreciate you giving us the opportunity today to talk about what
awesome.
We do.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Tom Raffio, President and CEO of Northeast Delta Dental, host of Delta Dental Radio, stories from the starter line, and more. Going a little bit early on this Thursday with some good news to get us out of the week. We're not there yet, but you have some busy stuff tomorrow. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Yeah, thanks for accommodating me. Actually have our own board meetings because you need a board of directors to be supportive so we can do all the things that we do in the community. And one of those things was last night, we are the major sponsor of a program called the Capital Area Student Leadership Program. And we have sophomores in local high schools, Bishop Brady, Bow High School, Concord, Hopkinton, John Stark, Merrimack Valley, and Pembroke. And what it is, Jack, it's effectively a mini version of Leadership New Hampshire, but for sophomore students at those schools. And I met them and their parents last night at their graduation. And, you know, Jack, I know there's a lot of noise in Washington, D.C., and even locally sometimes, but when you meet young people that are committed to wanting to become emerging leaders, you become much more glasses half full for our future. So that's, I just wanted to pass that along because it was quite exciting to see these young students and their parents. And we've been sponsoring that for many, many years. And some of the students who have graduated, you know, stay in touch and they say, you know, that month program really, you know, transformed them. So they were, you know, much more confident in terms of, you know, public speaking and giving back to the community. And even, as you know, Jack, even at a young age, you can start giving back to the community. So that was last night. And then I have a question for you, Jack. Is it worth it, do you think, for me to go up skiing Saturday?
Well, it's always, you know, as long as there's some snow there in the trail, you'll find your way down. I guess it's worth it if you want to milk and get a few more runs, and it's probably not going to be great, but you know that already.
You got it. Well, I just have skiing for me is one of the few things where I can totally just liberate my mind and just go down because you're skiing down fast. Of course, you can't be thinking about anything else. But on Sunday, hopefully it'll be better weather, we have the St. Patrick's Day race in Manchester. They always have it a week later, some traditional reason for that. I think part of that was so they can get the bands and stuff that aren't involved with the last week's parade, I guess. But in any event, so we have a two-mile race, and the signature charity for this year's Millennium Running Series is Special Olympics. So every race, I see the great people from, you know, from Special Olympics. So there's that. And then since you mentioned Veterans Count, and we will be a sponsor working directly with Easter Sales, for my veterans friends, and it's seemingly it's more than ever, Jack, and this is fine because my generous board of directors supported this to the tune of $300,000 in New Hampshire and $300,000 in Maine. And essentially, veterans, you can call me at 223-1300, and I'll connect you with Dr. Mitch Correa. And if you're not eligible for the VA dental benefits, and if you're not eligible for Medicaid, then you're eligible for this program. And speaking of Medicaid, it's going well. We have almost every weekend, this weekend is in the North Country, we have a mobile dental clinic. So even though we don't yet have enough dentists in the Medicaid network, we're basically bringing the mobile dental clinics to people in underserved areas. And then this weekend on Northeast Delta Dental Radio, I have Patricia Carty, who's the Manchester, you know, mental health. And I think, as you know, right after oral health or right equal to oral health, one of my passions is, you know, mental health awareness. So Patricia does a good job explaining what they do. So that's my positive story, and I'm sticking with it. How's that, Jack?
It's great stuff, Tom. Before I let you go, J-Dog's going to be volunteering with some basically wheelchair-type sports at New Hampshire Technical Institute this weekend for the independent living folks, and he's one of the most eligible bachelors in the Capital Region, so that's on Saturday. But you know all about the importance of that.
Oh, my God. The Grand State Independent Living, I have a colleague, Mike Bourbeau, who's on their board, and they do so much to make sure people can stay independent. They really stress the independent in their acronym. So I'm so glad Jay's doing that, and I can't think of a better guy to be there. And it's one of the many organizations that we do support. And speaking of NHI, where if things go well tomorrow at my board meeting, we'll be granting them $500,000 so that we can expand their hygiene program. So
awesome, good stuff.
All right, Jay.
Thanks, Tom.
Jack. Take care. Bye.